Hello, Fenella Kernebone with you, and happy holidays to you. Welcome to the first of our summer specials right here on By Design. Fabulous to join you. And during this season of festivity, today's show is all about sustainability. Whether it's mass-produced or handmade, today our panel puts the focus squarely back on sustainable design. Jan Ryan catches up with the ever-energetic landscape architect Costa Georgiadis, host of ABC TV's Gardening Australia, in his family's renovated kitchen at home in Bondi, Sydney.
So this is our family home, and the kitchen, after 35, 40 years, it certainly wasn't a change out of fashion. It was literally the cupboard doors were falling off. But I loved it. It had red tiles, and it was really dark, and it just had that early 70s look about it.
That's In the Field with Costa Georgiadis at his family home. But first, I'm sure more than a few of us have thrown out food throughout the year. Limp-looking parsley, mangy oranges, eggs we forgot to cook. In fact, Australians throw away over $7.9 billion of food every year. That's tons of edible stuff that ends up in landfill. And like me, if you're living in the city, a lot of the food we buy is either trucked in or even imported, which means more and more fossil fuels and energy is being used. So how can we do it better? How can we get more out of life using less? Well, one movement that has had a huge impact is permaculture, permanent agriculture, an entire design philosophy that aims to guide us towards a sustainable future. And my first guest today is the co-founder of permaculture, David Holmgren. So permaculture, how exactly does it work? What are its basic principles?
Well, permaculture can be understood really at three levels. Firstly, it's a design system for both sustainable living and land use. And so it's a conceptual, that's the conceptual level. And people often think of it more at the toolkit level of its strategies and techniques for more self-reliant and sustainable living, which might involve everything from growing our own food to doing a home energy audit, looking at our connections in the community and reducing our dependence on faraway, complex and environmentally impacting things that sustain us.
Okay, so it's much more than simply planting a veggie patch in the backyard then. It's a much bigger picture than that, isn't it?
Yeah, permaculture suffers in a way from actually being absorbed into the mainstream mindset of Australia as a sort of a cool form of organic gardening, which is an incredible success story, really, for something that you could say is a very radical approach to how we need to change everything in the way we design our society from first principles. And the ABC Gardening Australia program has been a big contributor to that absorption of permaculture thinking into the Australian mainstream. But it also has tended to result in people thinking that's just what permaculture is.
Sure. Just briefly, can you touch on the origins, David, of permaculture? Because, I mean, you started it in the late 1970s with your mentor, your colleague, Bill Mollison. So what was happening in the environmental movement at that time?
Well, Permaculture One was published in 1978, and I regard that as the peak of what I call the first wave of modern environmentalism. And that came out of work that Bill and I did in the early to mid-1970s, influenced by things like the Limits to Growth report of 1972 and the oil crises of that time and the last great global economic recession. So there was a huge interest in what today we would call sustainability. And permaculture was a design response to that, focusing on, well, what do humans really need? And identifying that, well, actually, the most significant and complex thing that we need to do is actually to feed ourselves. Mm. And therefore, we looked at the design of agriculture and how we feed ourselves as the number one focus in a whole design strategy.
It's interesting. I mean, it started off with both of you in Australia, led from Tasmania, and now it's global. There are projects all over the world, David, obviously in Australia, but Cuba, Argentina, Africa. But in many ways, it changes different meanings in different places, doesn't it? From Indigenous communities to stronger economies. How does that work?
Well, it definitely does. And I think the genius of that, like I say I am the co-originator of the permaculture concept, but I say Bill Mollison is the father of the permaculture movement, because permaculture needs to be understood at that level too. It's not just an idea that stayed with, you know, some obscure Tasmanian academic and some self-taught semi-feral colleague of his who was actually a design student at the time, because it went out through the permaculture design course process around Australia and then around the world. And as you say, that's now in many, many different countries, and it has different expressions in different places. So it's very different in its sort of application if you're working in a highly damaged, degraded rural environments in developing countries, from how we work with the billion or so middle class people to change their dysfunctional behaviour habits. But permaculture is working across that spectrum globally.
But as you say, it is about how we are doing things where we live, no matter what community you happen to be in. So no matter what the community is, it's all about building self-reliance. That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, self-reliance and the relocalization process, which is this positive, not just retreat of globalization, but the redevelopment of all the needs and processes at a more localized level, which is inevitable in what we call the energy descent future that we're heading for.
What's an energy descent future? What does that mean?
Well, I coined this term to use the most honest word in English to describe a continuous contraction in the energy available to support future generations of humanity, that happening over many, many generations, in the same way that it's a mirror of energy ascent, which has happened now for several hundred years based on fossil fuels. So it's not collapse and the end of the world, and it's not the techno-stability green mainstream that we're going to do a sort of cool, low-impact version of what we have, and it's not techno explosion that we're going to the stars. It's an honest recognition that we are at the peak, and now we have to deal with how to live with less and more creatively with what we have locally. And that's going to go on, not just an adaption in our lifetime, but over many, many generations. Mm.
And you actually see opportunities for us too in this energy descent future, don't you? That there are positives about this for us.
Oh, well, absolutely. It's a bit like, you know, the mining industry rubbing its hands with glee when commodity prices go up. Well, it's quite reasonable for permaculture people who've been committed to this, you know, like myself over a lifetime, to see huge opportunities in a world where resources are more expensive and more unreliable, and where there's rewards for self-reliance, rather than it just being a sort of an ideological thing that sort of people with strange ideas do. It becomes normalized as just sensible adaption to reality.
On By Design, I'm speaking with author, writer, speaker, educator, and of course the co-founder of permaculture, David Holmgren. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about permaculture, your stories as well. What are you doing in your town? What do you think about this energy descent future? Are there positives? What about in your suburb or in your area? I'm curious about how permaculture principles have transformed your lives. And all the links, of course, are on our website. David, maybe we can come back to our cities. I was talking to Brendan Gleeson, and we were talking about transition towns here on By Design, and we also talked about the future of suburbs, where, well, a lot of us actually live in suburbs, and a lot of the time they're being described as these major threats to sustainability. But you have a very different view than this, don't you?
Yeah, we see the spread out suburbs, which are obviously designed around cheap energy and car transport and all of those sort of things that everyone can see is quite dysfunctional, as highly suited to retrofitting for the low energy future, because separate houses in streets often have surplus have garden space around them, so it's possible to grow food, it's possible to collect water, it's possible to retrofit the buildings incrementally without waiting for the whole of society to agree that that's necessary. And then we also have surplus space in those houses that are filled with things and not people that are amenable to redeveloping home-based lifestyles and livelihoods. You know, kick the cars out of the triple garage and set up a home workshop, and the roller door on the front is your street front. Because this is actually how we are going to adapt to the energy descent future, because we have no plan from above. All we have is complete denial. So it is going to be this sort of bottom-up, incremental, ad hoc adaption. And it is actually much easier to do that sort of process in the suburbs than it is in multi-storey buildings, where not only do you have to get the agreement of all of the owners, and all of the much bigger regulatory structures. So we see the suburbs as a huge opportunity in that sense.
Well, can you give me a really easy starting point? I mean, how do we start? Maybe you're living in a suburb and you've got a bit of garden space. I mean, what do you suggest? What's a good point to start?
Well, the things that are already taking over the grassroots interest in sustainability, instead of just the light bulb sort of stuff, people, there's a huge interest in growing food in the backyard, because food is the most important thing we need every day, and that's the most easy thing that people can do at home. The other things are making the connections in your community of who else is doing these things, and making those connections at the local level, where you can carpool and share resources and rebuild those local community connections. And, of course, transition towns is a big part of the way that's being expressed. And it's no surprise that transition towns, which started in Britain, which is already down the energy descent path, actually came out of permaculture activism, of course.
So basically you're saying to get in touch with our local farmer, for example, an urban farmer, maybe even grow things yourself, trying to transform that space, that empty space, into something that you can actually use and essentially to eat.
Well, that's the interesting thing. There's people who are making that connection to farmers through community-supported agriculture and similar box scheme networks. And then there's people who are actually growing in their backyard, becoming good at it, and becoming micro farmers themselves, wanting to, in fact, producing surplus boxes of veggies and becoming the urban farmer, as well as, of course, public space urban farmers at places like Ceres, City Farm in Melbourne and similar places. So a lot of these initiatives that we're familiar with in other ways, I wouldn't say that permaculture is the only source for those, but if you actually look at the background of the people involved in a lot of these things, it's actually permaculture has been a big influence on that over the last 20 years.
I mean, some of these ideas, though, I know this has been going on for 30 years, but they do require a radical shift in how we live. So my question is it a tough sell, considering that our economy here in Australia is so robust, it's fueled by consumerism, by buying things, what will happen?
Well, it is difficult here. If you go to the United States or Europe, there's less problems because the economy is in contraction. So we're in this sort of schizoid state here now, where we've got this booming economy, things from overseas are cheaper and cheaper, but people feel really uneasy about more debt and all of those sorts of things. So there's forces pulling people both ways, but this is the exact issue that I set on a workshop in 2006 in Western Australia. How do you convince people in a boom economy like Western Australia that energy descent is a real thing to plan for?
What do you then see as the biggest challenges, I suppose, in our struggle to control our resources today?
Well, ironically, after a lifetime of focusing on the biological basis for existence and then the energetic basis, I've now become more and more interested in money, ironically, after ignoring it for most of my life. Because on the downside of the energy peak, it's actually the bubble economies that can unravel so fast that become almost the most important thing in shaping the immediate future. So that bubble economy, of course, is actually falling apart right now. So a lot of the mainstream sustainability strategies assume we have a growing and steady economy. Permaculture works from the basis that we can adapt and do these adaptions in an ad hoc way from the bottom up. And we've been doing that essentially for 30 years without the support of government and corporations. So I'm not saying that we've got all the answers, but there's a lot of people out there who are modelling and have been modelling how creative responses are going to happen.
David, it's really fantastic to talk to you and to hear about permaculture and about its history and about its application today. Thank you for joining me on By Design.
Thank you.
David Holmgren is an ecologist, ecological design engineer and writer, and is known as one of the co-originators of the permaculture concept with Bill Mollison. And you can find links on our website at abc.net.au/radionational.